I want to continue a love story with you tonight. It's the book of Ruth, as you know, we've been studying. But I've entitled tonight's lesson, in fact, Love is in the Air. And it has to do with Ruth and Boaz, but I want us to consider this love story, but in the midst of some unusual customs that will sound extremely odd to you and to me in today's society. But I hope that we will take a closer look at them and learn from them as we talk about love is in the air. You'll recall that Naomi, having lost her husband and her two sons, is now returning, has returned to Bethlehem. Ruth, her daughter-in-law, the Moabitess, has just determined that she's going to accompany her, despite the fact that Naomi has tried to persuade her to stay in Moab and find another husband and find security. And we find at the end of chapter 1 that Naomi returned and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab. Now they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. And we talked recently how Ruth, as it was barley harvest, suggested that she go out into the field and glean heads of grain. We read that in chapter 2, verse 2. Please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him in whose sight I may find favor. And she said to her, go, my daughter. It's interesting. Let me go glean in the fields of the landowner in whose sight I may find favor. And find favor she did. But again, I love a word in verse 3 of chapter 2. She left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. And happened. I love that word. A seeming coincidence, but I think it reflects the providence of God. Boaz was a wealthy man of the family of Elimelech. In fact, he was what is called a near kinsman. And we'll talk about that some more in just a moment. When Boaz learns the identity of Ruth, he takes her under his wings, if you will. And I use that terminology because that reflects a blessing that he pronounced upon her, that God would reward her for what she had been doing for Naomi. Reward her, for she had come and taken refuge under the wings of the Lord. So Boaz takes a special interest in her. And that's where we'll pick up at the end of chapter 2, and beginning in verse 14. Now Boaz said to her at mealtime, come here and eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed parched grain or roasted grain to her. And she ate and was satisfied and kept some back. And as you read this, and not thinking about how it proceeds just yet, you think she kept some back. Maybe she's hungry. Maybe she's thinking, I'll want a snack later. But we'll see what she does with it in just a moment. Verse 15, and she rose up to glean, and Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. Also let grain fall from the bundles purposely for her. Leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. So let some of it go. Neglect to take a sheave or a sheaf or two. And we'll see that she is able to glean in abundance on this particular occasion. And we see the care that Boaz is giving for Ruth. And so Ruth is excited. And we find in the next paragraph, she tells Naomi of that first day's gleaning. Verse 17. So she gleaned in the field until evening and beat out what she had gleaned. And it was about an ephah of barley. This is a New King James Version. An ephah of barley. We'll come back to that. She took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, so she brought out and gave to her what she had kept back after she had been satisfied. How much was an ephah of barley? An ephah is, or an ephah, it's pronounced either way, was a dry measure of quantity. equal to 3 seahs. Doesn't that clear it up for you? But I've also read that the equivalent of what she had gathered on this one day was about 30 pounds. And we'll see that Naomi is surprised at how much she has gleaned and wants to know more. Burton Kaufman wrote, "It seems that this first day's gleaning by Ruth netted something in the vicinity of 2/3 of a bushel, enough to support 2 people for about 5 days." So this was a significant amount. And we'll see that Naomi recognizes instantly someone is showing favor to Ruth. In fact, look at verse 19. "Her mother-in-law said to her, 'Where have you gleaned today? Where did you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you.' So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, 'The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz.'" And I think when Naomi hears the name Boaz, there's instant recognition. She recognizes that he is a relative, a near kinsman, in fact, of Elimelech, her deceased husband. And so now she, Naomi, is believing that this is God's hand at work here. And that's why she gives these instructions that we're about to see. Verse 20, "Then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, 'Blessed be he of the Lord, who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and the dead.'" Speaking of the living, Ruth and Naomi, the dead, as far as her husband and sons. "And Naomi said to her, 'This man is a relation of ours, one of our close relatives.'" I forgot something. She held back part of that roasted grain. And you might think she's going to save it for later, but did you notice in that reading that she gave it to Naomi? And I think just another small act that shows her love and devotion for Naomi. And again, Naomi sees this abundance of that she has gleaned. Nobody can glean that much in one day. Nobody's that good a gleaner. She recognizes she's been blessed by someone, and this someone is Boaz. "This man is a relation of ours, one of our close relatives." NIV has "one of our guardian redeemers." And the NIV has this footnote. The Hebrew word for guardian redeemer is a legal term for one who has the obligation to redeem a relative in serious difficulty. The word is goel. There's different variations of that Hebrew word, but that word at its root means to redeem, to act as a kinsman redeemer, to avenge, to ransom, to do the part of a kinsman redeemer. This, we need to understand something about the customs of the day that were based on the law of Moses. And this very akin to what is called the Levirate Law. And the Levirate Law simply meant that, well, such as in Naomi's case, her husband has died. That the Levirate Law indicated that her deceased husband's brother, so her brother-in-law, would then marry her, bear children by her, who would continue the family name and keep the family's property intact. And there's something very similar going on here, though this is with Ruth, who's a Moabitess, but she had married Mahlon, the son of Naomi and Elimelech. And so Boaz is a near kinsman. He's a close relative so that he may be the one who could be persuaded to do the part of a kinsman redeemer, who could keep that property within the family, who might even marry Ruth and bear children by her and continue the name of Elimelech and Mahlon for future generations. There's many different variations and uses of this term, but that's the way it fits into Naomi and Ruth's situation. In the case of Ruth, no brother-in-law was available. seeing the only sons of Elimelech were dead. Consequently, the nearest of kin, so says Lockyer in his book, the nearest of kin could be called upon to act as a redeemer, as a goel for the unfortunate, relieving them thereby of their distress. And again, notice Naomi and Ruth. Ruth is having to go out into the fields and glean. She is helping to take care of her mother-in-law. They are destitute. They are relying upon those landowners, those farmers, to not glean out to the edges of their fields so that they can go in and get what's left. And Boaz goes the extra mile here, and he provides extra for her because of what he has seen in her and because he's aware of the relation to Naomi as well. So verse 22, Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women and that people do not meet you in any other field." The linguist suggests, and other translations would indicate, that these instructions might carry the tone of, if you go somewhere else, you could get hurt. You could be harmed. Perhaps some of the workers out there were not known for their morality, and they might try to take advantage of this foreign woman. So stay with his young women, that people do not meet you or harm you in any other field. So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley harvest and wheat harvest, which would carry them over into June from late April. And she dwelt with her mother-in-law. She dwelt with her mother-in-law. Again, a reference as to Ruth's dedication to Naomi. She is staying with her. She is helping to care for her. Her love is obvious for her. Naomi has a clever plan for a proposal. She's a matchmaker, I like to call her. So she's seeing the care that Boaz has extended to Ruth. And so she says, "I need to get them married." Chapter 3, verse 1. Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you?" King James has the word, "Shall I not seek rest for you?" And the idea here is, "Shall I not try to find a home for you?" Meaning, "Shall I not try to find you a husband so that you can be taken care of for the rest of your life?" Rest in this context is the equivalent of marriage. You recall the blessing that Naomi gave to her two daughters-in-law as she urged them to return to Moab. This is chapter 1, verse 9. She said to them, "The Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband." So Naomi is thinking, and she has no doubt that if they go back to Moab, they'll find men to marry, and that those men, their husbands, would take care of them. "The Lord grant that you may find rest in the house of her husband." Or "may the Lord grant that each of you find rest in the home of another husband," is basically the blessing she is giving. So now, with Boaz's special treatment of Ruth, "Shall I not seek rest for you, a security, a home?" So she has this plan in mind. Look with me to verse 2 of chapter 3. "Boaz, whose young women you were with, is he not our relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor." And here are the instructions. A strange proposal indeed. "Therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself, put on your best garment, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking." So they're winnowing the barley. They're throwing up the grain into the air, letting the wind blow the chaff, and they're reaping the rewards of harvest, and it's a time of celebration. And so go to him as he's resting on the threshing floor, perhaps protecting his produce here, the production of barley. But don't make yourself known to him until he has finished eating and drinking. Verse 4. Then it shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do. Isn't that odd? What if we told our young women, that's the way you go find a husband? While they're resting, go in, uncover their feet, just lay down by their feet, and when they wake up, they'll tell you what you should do. And in our day and time, this action on the part of Naomi and Ruth appears questionable, even objectionable, from the moral standpoint. But when it's kept in its setting and the customs of the people of Israel at that time, it's rather than a scene of immorality, it's more of a legal appeal. By lying down at Boaz's feet, we learn, Ruth symbolized her proposal of marriage. She's saying, I'm available to be married to you if you will protect, if you will cover me with your skirt, with your clothing. And that would symbolize that he indeed would marry her. Naomi gives these instructions to Ruth. And I would suspect there would, if Ruth were alive today, there would be some objections, but she didn't. All that you say to me, I will do. Ruth 3, verse 5. And so she goes and she does. She follows Naomi's instructions. Verse 6. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed her. And after Boaz had eaten and drunk, his heart was cheerful. And he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came softly or quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. He's sleeping. Then about midnight, verse 8, the man, he's awakened, he's startled, he turns himself, and there was a woman lying at his feet. And he said, "Who are you?" And so she answered, "I am Ruth, your maidservant." New King James has it, "Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative." Other versions state it, "Spread the corner of your garment over me." In the singular, it refers to a garment, his clothing. And again, the custom was that by that action, he was signifying, yes, I will assume the part of the kinsman redeemer. I will not only redeem your land, but I will take you to be my wife. In the singular, it refers to that garment. In the plural, it's a reference to wings. It was a proposal of marriage. And remember, Boaz's blessing on Ruth when he said, "The Lord repay your work," this is Ruth 2 verse 12, "and a full reward be given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings," there's the plural form of that same word, "under whose wings you've come for refuge." I can't help but find that connection. By this custom, this strange custom of Naomi telling Ruth, basically you're going to go and tell him that you're available for marriage, that you desire to be married to him, that you desire for him to be your kinsman redeemer. And if he responds favorably, then he will spread the corner of his garment over you as a symbol of his acceptance. And you will then come under his protection. Pfeiffer remarks, "The custom of a man's placing a corner of his garment over a maiden as a token of marriage is known among the Arabs. And the situation described in Ruth 3 perhaps parallels this Arabic custom." But again, by Boaz spreading his skirt or his garment over Ruth. It seems to me that's the answer, God's answer, for Boaz's own prayer, that God would spread his protective wings over her. This was a strange custom, wasn't it? And it was also unusual. One writer notes in four ways. Notice this. Here was a woman proposing to a man. Number two, here was a young person proposing to an older individual. Number three, here was a field laborer proposing to a field owner. And number four, here was a foreigner proposing to a citizen. What is Boaz's response? Look at verse 10. "Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman." Now look at his statements. You have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning. And he has reference to the care that Ruth has demonstrated to Naomi. He says, you're being even more kind now. I'll come back to that. I've said that too much tonight, but I will come back to that. You didn't go after the young men, whether poor or rich. Let's play a detective here. What does that tell us about Boaz's age? Wouldn't it indicate that he is an older man? And many believe he was a much older man. Tradition says he may have been 80 years old. But Ruth had chosen to follow Naomi's instruction, to preserve the family into which she had come. And so her unselfishness had caused her to be obedient to Naomi and to basically make a proposal of marriage and of protection from Boaz. Also love the statement that he makes, "I will do all that you request. All the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman." The moral character of Ruth was reaffirmed by Boaz in the expression. And we'll see that he is concerned to maintain that pure image before the village. By the way, that word virtuous is the same word that's used in Proverbs 31 and verse 10. "Who can find a virtuous woman or wife? For her worth is far above rubies." And that gives us an idea of how much Boaz appreciates Ruth and finds her very valuable. Verse 12. "It is true," Boaz explains, "I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Stay this night, and in the morning it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative, this kinsman redeemer for you, good, let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning." So there's a relative that's even closer to her, to Naomi. He has the first option. So he's determined, "In the morning, I'm going to take care of this issue. And if he'll do it, so be it. But if not, I will fulfill that role." Ruth, the next morning, verse 14, reports her success to Naomi. "She lay at his feet until morning, and she arose before one could recognize another. Then he said, 'Do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor.'" Here's that concern of Boaz. The reason for the caution is clear enough. Nothing sinful had been done, but Boaz was concerned that the presence of a woman on the threshing floor might have been misunderstood. So tell no one about her. Verse 15, he's still looking out for Naomi as well. Bring the shawl that is on you and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 ephahs of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. Some believe it may not have been ephahs here, but seahs. Albert Barnes in his commentary suggests that. If that is correct, then she carried the equivalent of 2 ephahs of barley to Naomi. A bushel of barley weighs 50 pounds, and 1.5 bushels, the 6 seahs, would have weighed about 75 pounds. Quite a heavy load. Makes you wonder, is this a dowry? Or is this a down payment showing Boaz's intentions? Let's read the last 3 verses of chapter 3. So when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "Is that you, my daughter?" The idea may be more, "How have you fared, my daughter?" Or, "How did it go?" And she told her all that the man had done for her. And she said, "These 6 ephahs of barley he gave me, for he said to me, 'Do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" Verse 18. Then she said, "Sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out. For the man will not rest until he has concluded the matter this day." Next time, Lord willing, we'll see what develops. But I don't want to finish without an application, or at least highlight something that I think is particularly noteworthy that we can appreciate and even apply. And it may help us even understand something else a little better. Love is in the air. And I think Boaz's affections are pretty obvious in the way that he has taken care. He's impressed that Ruth is willing to, hasn't gone after the young men, but is willing to look out for her family and ask him to be the kinsman redeemer. Love is in the air. And I'm going to suggest this to you. I think the love that's in the air here in the story of Ruth is more Ruth's love for Naomi than her love for Boaz. Ruth, probably of a marriageable age, could have found a young man to spend the rest of her life with. She could have stayed in Moab, couldn't she? But yet she's devoted to Naomi. The real love here is the love of Ruth for Naomi. In fact, listen to these words. The great point in this remarkable narrative is that Ruth acted unselfishly by placing the purpose of providing an heir to her husband Mahlon and her mother-in-law Naomi on the very highest level of priority. She recognized her own happiness as secondary to that intention. And such a model of selfless concern for the needs of others reminds us of Jesus Christ himself. You see, Ruth's love for Naomi is a reflection of the love of Jesus for you and for me. How he was completely selfless. How he went to the cross. Yes, it was the Father's will, but he also went willingly, knowing that by dying on the cross for our sins, sins he didn't commit himself, that you and I can be saved. No selfishness whatsoever. Complete selflessness that is consumed Jesus. And I think was also modeled by Ruth. That's the kind of love that we're loved with. That's the kind of love that we're called to love God with and to love one another. How will you respond to that love? It may be that you want to surrender your life in obedience to the gospel tonight. May be that you desire the prayers of the church tonight to help you respond to the love of God in the appropriate way. If you're subject to the invitation of Christ, please come right now as we stand and sing.